And now, coming to you live, but not really live, from Gut Check World Headquarters in the capital city of a boxing glove-shaped state, and Gut Check South Command, deep in the belly button above the buckle of the Bible Belt, it's the Gut Check Podcast with your hosts, Ted Gluck and Zach Bartles.
Hey, welcome to the Gut Check Podcast. I am Ted Gluck, joined, as always, by my good friend and partner in radio, Zachary Bartles. And baby, I have to admit, I believe that I got spoiled this summer, because I think every episode in the summer of Gut Check, we recorded in each other's presence in the same room, did we not?
We did, and this is going to be the only one from the summer of Gut Check, because episode 100 and 101 are both live eps from the Nakatomi Smoke Room. This is going to be the only one that's a lame little, you know, over Skype crap fest. I don't want to undersell it or anything. It's going to be really, really great, but it's going to be about 20 minutes long, and it's not going to be interesting.
Yes, exactly. It's going to be very boring. It's going to be us talking about old man things, and that's okay. That's the way it has to be, because due to some technical difficulties that we had in our other studios, we just lost an episode. So there's a whole...
Dude, and I had a total, like, panic attack. I'm like, what if all the rest of them from that point on are like this? Episode 100, episode 101, and they weren't.
Good.
So I kind of remember, like, the phone being, like, under your thigh, kind of.
Yeah.
And it kind of moving around and stuff, and thinking, I hope that's okay. And, yeah, I don't know, maybe it had a problem with touching your thigh. When we've been on the settee, I've had no problem with it, but...
Yeah, nor have I. I've had no problem with our thighs touching things in the past, but you know what? Times change in radio, Zach, and we've got to keep up with this fast-paced business, you know? And speaking of, you have kept up with just a fascinating fast-paced trend in publishing, and we are nothing if not on the... We're nothing if not on the leading edge of things, Zach. And... I want to tell the audience about a new phenomenon in publishing called an ebook. So an ebook is like a book, except that it's electronic. And instead of having like the book to like set on your thighs, like you can't really rest it on your thighs and open it and like flip the pages and annotate it like you would a normal book. But it's a book that you pay this little online bookseller, Amazon, a little bit of money, and they send you the book electronically. Am I getting this right?
Yeah, that's one way to look at it. The other side of things would be to say it's kind of like a really simple web page that you pay for.
Yes, exactly. And in as much as most web pages you get for free, like you get them just by like being on the internet, this is a web page that you pay a little bit for, and then Amazon sends you the rest of the web page. So
the little bit that you pay, though, in this case, is only $2.99.
It's $2.99. So. It's the cost, Zach, of not even a full cup of coffee. That's like two-thirds of a cup of coffee.
At Strange Matter Coffee Company.
It's Strange Matter, and it comes minus the judgment that you get from being heterosexual. It's Strange Matter. So
now this one, to the contrary, this one is going to have quite a bit of judgment if you haven't been hard enough on your sin.
Oh, great. So it's sort of it's the opposite of going into Strange Matter Coffee in the sense that...
That wasn't my original intent, but I suppose to that degree, yeah.
Yeah.
The book is called Cobra Kai and Sanctification.
Okay.
And it is simultaneously, and I acknowledge this is a straight up cake and eat it too kind of scenario, simultaneously a parody of the 10 zillion, the gospel according to insert pop culture phenomenon, and a straightforward kind of spin on Mortification of Sin, John Owen, Charles Spurgeon, Thomas Watson, that kind of stuff. And so a lot of lessons from men like John Kreese, Johnny Lawrence, Terry Silver.
Yeah.
A lot of, basically the premise is when it comes to dealing with the sin nature, most of us are like a sniveling, whiny little Daniel LaRusso.
Yeah.
Wanting to eat macaroni and cheese all the time, complaining about moving to California.
Seriously.
Whenever the enemy shows up going, oh, come on, in a really whiny voice and trying to work things out.
Exactly.
And what we need to be is like Johnny Lawrence, at the very least provocation, just smashing it in the face.
Yeah.
And so 20,000 words to kind of say that in a lot of different ways. But I think it actually will make you laugh and kind of be amusing on the one level, and also hopefully amp you up to like smash sin and mortify the flesh on another level. So,
dude, I love that.
We'll see.
Now, you know what occurred to me as you were talking, Zach, about this book? And I think everybody should buy it. I think you should run, not walk, to Amazon. So we've got an exclusive with Amazon on this book. So
actually, this one's also on BarnesandNoble.com for your Nook reader, if you have a Nook reader.
So I spoke too soon. Business deals have just...
I've gone corporate, Ted.
We've gone corporate. We've made business deals. We're not just doing the little mom and pop independent booksellers anymore. We've gone corporate with this project.
With this faceless Barnes and Noble, megalithic. What have I done?
I'm going to tell you right now. I've never interacted with either Barnes or Noble. So I don't know where they office, but now that we're in business with them on this project, I'd like a little interface with them. You know, I just like to know
who
I'm
doing business
with.
We should catch lunch. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Right, yeah.
One of the things that occurred to me as you were talking, about John Kreese and Johnny Lawrence. It occurred to me that, like, with a few subtle tweaks, both of those would work as like Puritan writer names. So if your book was written by like J.L. Kreese or by Jonathan Lawrence. Jonathan Lawrence could totally be a Puritan era writer and pastor.
That sounds like someone who signed the like one of the divines that signed the Westminster Confession of Faith.
Dude, absolutely. Like signed by John Lawrence, J.L. Lawrence.
Brother, you know, John Lawrence.
J.C. Kreese, you know. I love this, man. I love it. Now, baby, you are an aficionado. You are like a Karate Kid historian. So when people read this book, they're going to get a real sort of cruise down Karate Kid memory lane. Can you speak to like how each of the Karate Kid movies is represented in this tome? Because I have to tell you, I mean, and it's close, but for me, between Karate Kid 1 and Karate Kid 2, I think Karate Kid 2 is my favorite one. I love it. I love Okinawa. I love the tea service, you know, situation that we get into in Karate Kid 2. I love the Peter Cetera song that appears at the end.
Oh, you and me both, buddy.
Does Karate Kid 2 get any love in this book, or is it all strictly Karate Kid 1?
Okay. No, well, here's what we've got. We've got a lot from the new Cobra Kai series.
Okay.
Which, you know, kind of prompted the writing of the book. Seeing how it actually portrays Cobra Kai in many ways in a positive light. You know, and making me think, you know, that's kind of, you know, sanctification in a nutshell. Strike first, strike hard, no mercy. Then we've got a lot from Karate Kid 1, an awful lot. And a lot, surprisingly a lot, from Karate Kid 3.
Ah, Karate Kid 3,
which is essentially the worst movie ever made, but it's got a lot of hardcore, awesome Cobra Kai stuff in it. And so I've got a whole chapter called Quicksilver. And if you'll recall, that was the name of Terry Silver's, I think, imaginary program that he was putting Daniel LaRusso through. If your enemy cannot stand, he cannot fight. If your enemy cannot breathe, he cannot fight. If your enemy cannot see, he cannot fight. So Karate Kid 3 actually gets a lot. I've got that whole section on Terry Silver. We got a lot about Mike Barnes, Karate's bad boy. And Karate Kid 2, sadly, it doesn't get much, and there's one reason. Because
what?
The Cobra Kai are only in it for the first 5 to 6 minutes.
Dude, that's true, man. That's true. Yeah, it's all like an Okinawa situation after that, so... you've got high-waisted pants, shiny shirt guy, but no Cobra Kai in Karate Kid 2.
Yeah, I got a little reference to Chosen in there. And you know, a few references to the way that Daniel LaRusso mishandles everything in Karate Kid 2, but
he really does. Has there ever been a more sort of bumbling protagonist in these kind of movies than Daniel LaRusso?
Well, and answer me this. You've been to Okinawa, where allegedly murder's okay, because like everybody is around that, you know, there's a moat that's all of 3 feet, right, across.
Yeah.
Everyone's on one side of the moat. Daniel's on the inside getting beaten to death because he sucks at karate. And And like nobody's like, you know what? How about the 10 of us jump across the moat and rescue him? Everyone's just like, you know what? Get out your drum and we'll give him one last, you know, little pep talk via drum. So you've been there. You've won the fight to the death with essentially the greatest martial artist in the country where karate was invented.
Yeah.
You come back home, right? You're feeling good. You're feeling big.
Feeling satisfied. Yeah,
right? I mean, granted, you're very dissatisfied because Kumiko's actually not going to come move to America. And that sucks. But at the same time, you want to defend your title. You feel like, I can handle this. And then a guy shows up at your house who is karate's bad boy.
Yeah.
And literally slaps you around, kicks you around, beats you around at will.
Yeah.
You never get a single shot in.
Yeah.
And even at the end, you know how he wins? I don't know if you remember this, but
I don't.
The purposeful, and I hope I'm not boring you here, Ted, because I know I get excited about the kind of
dude. No, you're not boring me at all. This is fascinating.
The actual strategy that John Kreese and his very good friend, Terry Silver's the best friend you could ever have. I mean, like he's a better friend than I could ever be to you, and I wish
loyal,
that weren't true.
You know, yeah, absolutely. He takes all his meetings in a sink. I mean, I could go on and on about Terry Silver.
But the strategy they've developed is you gain a point and then you purposely lose it by doing something that's against the rules. That way, you keep the score 0-0 while you beat the crap out of this kid. Then it goes to sudden death. In sudden death, you get the point, you win the trophy, and we've hurt him and added insult to injury by taking the trophy. So the only time Daniel lays a finger on this guy is at the end of that, in the sudden death, when he uses this sneaky like move where he confuses him with the kata and then gets a feeble little punch in. That's it.
Yeah.
Now, how do those two things go together? I mean, this is a guy who's already had, you know, such great success.
Yeah. Soaring success in karate. But yeah, he gets home and it's like he's never done karate before. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like it's all new to him.
He hasn't forgotten how to eat mac and cheese.
How does Mike Barnes know where he lives? I mean, this is pre-internet, right? I mean, the internet's not like a huge thing where everybody's online all the time. So, like, how does Mike Barnes even know where he lives to come and smack him around? I mean, that's...
Isn't it that Terry Silver has, like, millions of dollars worth of resources at his disposal? So...
Yeah.
He just probably has, like, an on-retainer, like, PI or something.
Like an address guy. Like a guy who's just digging... he's the address guy. He's just digging up addresses all day long, you know? While Terry Silver sits in the sink and takes his meetings and speaks on his cordless phone. The address guy's out there doing all the work. Now, one thing occurred to me, Zach, as we were talking, and tell me if you think this is a good idea or not, because I'd really like to do it. For our new book, for the Christian Gentleman Smoking Companion 2, the Cigar Room Companion, with original essays by us, I would like to write a revisionist history of what would have happened if Kumiko had come home with Daniel
Larson. Oh, man, I like that.
What kind of life would they have had stateside, you know?
Granted, Daniel did not deserve Kumiko to come home. And, like, I feel like she would have gotten to America and been like, oh, you were my only point of reference for Americans. Also, all American men think I'm super hot and are after me. Also, I'm done with Daniel quicker than you can say macaroni and cheese, man. I'm done.
That was my next question. Like, do you think the relationship would make it once they get stateside? Because I feel like she'd encounter, like, all kinds of hot American guys, you know?
And the thing with Daniel is his go-to move is to lash out at his mother, at his sensei, at his friends, at his girlfriend. He lashes out at Allie and loses her. He's not a good person to be around.
Yeah, I just feel like he's not great relationally. Like, he drives people away, you know?
Yeah.
And that's not what you're looking for when you're looking to, like, have an American boyfriend and then go start a new life several thousand miles away from the only thing you know, you know? I'm with you. I agree. That's not going to go well. Zach, let me ask you another question about the book. And this is rooted in part in Gutcheck's history as a company. In part of it, I want to preface by saying, like, I think this book could be huge. Like, I really do. It's the right sort of tone and idea, and it's a great idea. It's only $3. I think we could sell a lot of these. So there's that, but my follow-up question to that is, do you think there could be a scenario in which sort of the premise is a little too niche for a broad audience, i.e. we make a joke, we make a really nuanced joke that we think is really funny and like nobody else gets it. And do you worry about that at all?
I went in assuming that because it is a niche of a niche, possibly of a third niche, that it would not be a huge seller. So my expectations have been managed in that way. But I hope that the Gut Check Army proves me wrong. I really think, and if you get it and read it, post about it, or even if you don't, tweet about it, get it out there, because I got to reach the entire fans of the Cobra Kai who are also Christians and like laughing, but also at the same time reading somewhat serious things about sanctification crowd. And they are broadly in diaspora.
Yeah, they are. They are. And you know what? This is going to bring them together, Zach. This is going to give them something to rally around, something to unite around. And I'm excited about that. Now, baby, jog my memory, because we've recorded a lot of chapters and we've recorded a lot of Summer of Gut Check content. Do we need to re-record a chapter on this episode? Or we do not.
No, we didn't do a chapter. The next chapter will be in episode 101, I believe, which is the one from after our little spat. And that's a little preview of what you're going to hear about.
So our little spat was episode 100?
100, yeah.
That's okay, but I feel like it jogged my memory. I feel like we resolved it on the air, didn't we?
We did. And then episode 101 is the really, really late night, super tired, like 4 a.m.
Yeah.
With my favorite line, get all your glances in now.
Oh, that was the one with the glancing. That was the spat, wasn't it?
Oh, no. The spat was before we started even recording episode 100, during the kind of beginning of a film.
Beginning screening, Waiting for Guffman. I remember that.
Yeah.
I remember. See, one thing I do interpersonally that I think makes me a little bit different than Daniel LaRusso, like, if I have a spat with someone and we make up, then I usually, like, I forget about the spat almost immediately, and it's as though it never happened. Although I feel like if one of us were Daniel LaRusso, he would carry that around and be all weird about it for an indefinite period of time, and it would.
But he wouldn't fight the guy,
right? Nor would he just make up and be cool about it. He would exist in that like kind of third area where he's neither confronting it nor like letting it go.
Yeah.
He's
case
just
in point, Ted.
Yeah.
He even gets to the point where he does that with his own bike. You remember?
Dude,
he,
I do. He's
yells at his
to that bike
and he's like, I hate this bike, I hate this bike. And he like beats up his bike because he can't beat up anyone or anything else. And then he throws his bike into a dumpster.
Dude, that part, and let's talk about that for a minute. because I remember that, and it's one of my least favorite parts of Karate Kid. Because I feel like, and maybe I'm inferring a whole bunch of things here that aren't necessarily true, but I feel like somebody worked really hard to provide that bike for him, and he just, like, what problem did he have with the bike? You know, it wasn't the bike's fault.
His mother probably is the one who worked really hard, a single mom.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's trying to do everything for him, give him the best possible life. He gets nothing but grief from the guy. And then, here's a weird thing. She's on Cobra Kai, filmed in 2018, and she's become the worst actress in the world. Everything's super weirdly overacted.
Fascinating.
And it's really. I felt like she did a great job in Karate Kid 1, and then she just. I don't know what happened.
And I'm not looking at her IMDb, so I have no idea if this is true or not. But is it because maybe she didn't do any acting in between Karate Kid and Cobra Kai?
I don't remember seeing her in those 34 intervening years. Do you?
Yeah, it could have been a 34-year dry spell, which could explain the, you know, kind of the lack of craftsmanship in her her work in Cobra Kai. Okay, that leads to another question. Of all the actors that appeared in the original Karate Kid and then later, 34 years later, in Cobra Kai, who's acting sort of aged the best, if that makes sense?
By far, William Zabka's.
Billy Zabka. I love it.
Dude, that guy... Dude, they have the first two episodes on YouTube for free.
Yeah.
You should check them out. That guy is so relatable.
Interesting.
That character... I mean, you know, he was just like the basic 80s douche, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, they've got these two guys switched so that now Daniel's successful and lives in Ventura, or where I don't know what's the rich part, the hills. Yeah. Johnny is poor and is a dirtbag and lives in Reseda.
Okay. Fascinating.
And so his whole life is just kind of a really a bummer.
Yeah.
And he plays it in such a way where it's like simultaneously guy who missed his shot and just, you know, pathetically lives in the past, but
yeah.
also you really want him to do well and overcome it.
Interesting.
And oh man, he's great.
Man, that's so good. You know, like I want to equate William Zabka in the original Karate Kid to somebody who you and I both saw in a movie. The movie is Wedding Crashers, which is a movie that you and I used to reference a whole lot because it has Vince Vaughn in it doing Vince Vaughn things. But I first saw Bradley Cooper in Wedding Crashers, and he played Sack, who was the bad guy.
Right.
Just, like, universally a douche. His character was one-dimensional. It had no nuance. And I remember when I first saw Bradley Cooper, I hadn't seen him in anything else up to that point. But when I saw him as Sack in Wedding Crashers, I thought, this guy's going to have a nice run as a douche in comedies, and that's going to be it. Although
yes,
Bradley Cooper's...
I had the exact same experience, dude.
Yeah, though we couldn't have been more wrong, because Bradley
exactly.
Cooper has become this like incredible leading man with all these nuanced roles, and he's really talented, and we were dead wrong about Bradley Cooper. But when I saw him in Wedding Crashers, I thought I was looking at another William Zabka. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and we were wrong about Zabka too, insofar as we assumed that that was all he would do. When he aged out of those teenage 80s douche roles, he would just fade away.
Yeah, and instead, 34 years happened, you know.
Well,
so.
No, this guy, if you look at his IMDb page, he's actually made some short films and like music videos. He's had a pretty decent career.
Nice, nice. I'm glad to hear that, man. I'm really glad to hear that. So Zach, tell them again the title of the book, where they can find it.
The book is called Cobra Kai and Sanctification, and it is on Amazon, and it is on Barnes and Noble for your Kindle or your Nook.
Yeah.
Or you can download the Kindle app on your phone if you don't have a Kindle. And again, it's like you're looking at a web page, only you've paid money for it, and we call it a book. But it's
yes.
about 20,000 words. It's $2.99. Ted, do we have time for me to make a brief observation and then bounce one thing quickly off you, or do you have to get going?
No, sure we do. Yeah, let's do that.
The observation is I'm looking at the Skype window
yeah.
that where you and I are talking,
yeah.
and in the lower right-hand corner, there's a beating heart.
What?
Do you have that?
I do not have that. That's strange.
In the lower right-hand corner, there's a plus sign, and right next to it is a beating heart. It's a heart icon. It's getting bigger and smaller, and I have this like dread in the back of my mind that it's going to stop beating, and I'm going to die.
Huh. Lower right hand?
Yeah.
That's so weird, man. No, I don't have that. That's really strange. I kind of wish I did, though, now.
I'm going to hover over it and see if it actually, like...
Okay, I'm hovering.
...says anything. It just says heart. I hover over it and it just says heart.
That's so weird.
I clicked
yeah,
on
I
it.
I have no heart.
Oh,
I have zero hearts.
Oh, you know what it is? It's a bunch of emojis that I could send your way.
Oh,
I'm sending,
okay.
sending to the heart, buddy. Did you get that?
You sent me something?
Yeah. You didn't
Hang
get
on.
The heart?
No, I didn't get the heart. Let me
wow.
Let me see. No, no
Ted, heart, the heart is implied,
hearts.
Though. You got no heart, kid.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right, so what's the thing you want to lay on me?
Well, we were going to talk old man stuff vis-a-vis, like, return to routine when school starts up and you're teaching again and, you know,
yeah.
church stuff starts. Via old man discussion,
yeah.
what do you think of this thing that I'm doing? I am I'm in the process of acquiring various components that will allow me to build an arcade cabinet, like an old school arcade video game machine, a Pac-Man machine.
Yes.
Like complete with the CRT screen TV and like the backlit marquee up at the top with the old like Pac-Man graphics and everything.
Yes, dude.
Is that a sad old man thing or what is that? What's going on?
Well, let me venture an answer. Number one, it's definitely an old man thing. But I think it's the opposite of a sad old man thing. I think it's a great old man thing, and here's why. Who among us who grew up in a certain time period that being the 80s, who didn't want like an actual like arcade quality video game like console in our house? That was the dream to me.
Yeah.
That was like literally the dream to be able to like, you know, get up on a Saturday morning, wipe the sleep out of your eyes and like walk into a room in your house where there's a like a video game thing. I think this is great. I see no downside to it. That being the case, let me ask you like what kind of progress you're making on this.
Well, I've just actually started buying things, and yeah. I actually told my wife about it last night, and I felt like I was either telling her I had cancer or that I was, you know, seeing someone else on the side or something.
Yeah.
Because her face just went like dead neutral. Like,
oh wow.
Like no response. And she was like, is that what you were talking about on Facebook where you said you wanted an old tube TV? And I was like, yeah, so it's that. So and she's like, uh-huh. And she was very kind of cagey and yeah. closed off in a way. I don't think she's bought into, maybe she felt like she should have been, what's the word, consulted before yeah. I was like hip deep in the process.
Before you were going to spend hundreds of dollars on a thing that would take up like, lots of square footage in your home.
No, the goal is to do it for less than 150, and I think I'm going to get it done. I'm going to have
to. Dude, that's awesome. That's hardly anything. So tip of the cap to you.
I say to her $3,500 to buy a new one. She's like, yeah, and I can tell she's thinking like the one you make is going to look like crap compared to the one you'd shell out the big bucks for. So now I've become kind of all consumed with yeah. making it so good yeah. that she has to eat the words I imagine she was thinking.
Dude, so it's a challenge in a way because like now you're the character. Like you're in a sense you are the Daniel LaRusso in this scenario in that like. Nobody thinks you can do it, but you're gonna rise up and show everyone that you can in fact do it.
Only so, unlike Daniel LaRusso, I think I actually can.
Yeah, exactly. Unlike Daniel LaRusso, you think you actually can, and unlike Daniel LaRusso, you won't be smashing your bike in a fit of rage at any point during the process. So are you finding like the panels and sort of the gadgetry that goes into this is that stuff all available on eBay as like individual components?
Yeah, and there's this whole subculture of these people who do this.
Yeah.
So there are a number of sources where you get like the big chunky buttons and the joystick with the big ball on the top.
Yes.
And you know like all that stuff. You know I'm just getting MDF for the outside of the cabinet, which is you know that kind of pressed fiberboard. And you know you can buy they call it T-molding. It's that like plastic, like in a rounded plastic stuff that goes on the sure. edge of the wood. You yep. buy that real cheap. It's gonna come together, I think, real cheap, and I think it's gonna look real nice. I'll post it on the Facebook page when we get it done,
dude. But, please do. I love that. That's a great old man project.
I'm so glad to hear you say that because I was feeling like it was weirdly juvenile for me to want to do that still at 40 years old.
Dude, okay, so I think the best old man projects are the ones that, like, smack of juvenility, as it were. In that, so there's two types of old men, Zach. There's two genres of old men, and I'll leave you with this. The kind of old man that you and I admire but also think is boring is the kind of old man whose projects center around things that are, like, entirely practical. Like, the sort of old man that's, like, you know, sealing up his driveway or like staining the deck again and doing it all himself, which is admirable. But, you know, like there's nothing interesting there. But the coolest old men are the ones who are like restoring an old thing from their childhood or, you know, they're doing something that harkens back to a time when life was simpler for them. You know what I mean?
Right.
And you are that kind of old man. And I admire that. I think that's great.
Oh, you know what? And do you have 1 minute to tell me if you have ever gone into one of these old man projects that was... I mean, the football helmet collecting is kind of along those lines, but...
Extremely juvenile.
Yeah, so you would equate that. That's kind of... That's kind
oh,
of
I,
your...
would, I would put that on the same level. And in fact, yeah. I just bought another football helmet to restore. So I literally...
Good.
I bought one on eBay. It should be... It might be at my house today. It might be there this afternoon when I go home, which I would be really excited about. But yeah, I try to space them out so that at no point my wife is like, okay, enough, too much, you know.
right.
And I try to find really good deals So I'll scour eBay for like 3 or 4 months until I find like the perfect thing, like the perfect helmet that I get for really below market value, and then I can fix it all up and make it awesome. So, similar genre of old man impracticality, though, because I mean, there's no like real world benefit to my family. And in fact, your projects probably, although I am making this helmet for Tristan, so
that's cool. Very cool.
I'm making this helmet for my son, so there is going to be like a little bit of spreading of the joy there. But I see your entire family enjoying this this Pac-Man console, including your wife.
One would hope.
Exactly. That's the goal. Well, baby, this has been an encouragement. Like, I'm glad you're into some old man stuff that's satisfying you. I'm glad you have a new book out. Everybody should buy it. Everybody should buy it, both to support the Gut Check Army and our ongoing takeover, our ongoing dominance in the world of literature and now ebook sales. And they should buy it to like add yet more like cash flow to your old man sensibilities. So
yes, you're buying buttons on the machine is what you're doing.
Dude, you're buying buttons on the machine, you're buying components, things that are ultimately going to go into this gaming console, which everybody in the Gut Check Army will will enjoy. I mean, albeit not in a personal, like kind of tangible way, but they'll enjoy it through you, because we're going to talk about it a whole bunch. And Zach, I got to tell you, for episodes that we kind of had to cadge together on the fly to replace the original episode, this has been a pleasure. I'm glad this went so well.
Indeed, man. I mean, there's no snits. That's next episode.
Yep. Yeah, no snits. There's no fighting. There's no me being exasperating about the glancing that you're doing as I'm speaking.
Glance. Get all the glances in
all
now.
All the glances. Have you guys been more aware of that since I brought it to your attention? All the glancing that you do as other people are speaking?
Nope.
No? Okay, yeah. Completely oblivious. That's good. Yeah, by no means should you like learn anything from that exchange. It's just content. It's just show content.
Yes, yes.
Well, baby, this has been fun. I have to go coach football now. So,
all right, man.
This has been the Gut Check Podcast. This has been episode 99, the real episode 99. go to LagarusRoasters.com. Baby, one more thing really quick. Have you had, there in Gut Check Corporate, have you had any contact from the Church Curmudgeons people on our ultimatum from last time?
He made some stupid joke about buying you lunch not to exceed $18.13 or something like that. I just ignored it.
You know what? I don't want lunch.
If he's not serious, he's not serious.
I don't want his lunch. No amount of lunch can make this right, in my opinion. The only thing that will make this right is 30%. So go to LagarusRoasters.com. Buy yourself copious amounts of Gut Check Espresso. Buy 0 bags, 0 units of Church Curmudgeon Blend. And we will see you next time.